back with Charles Halpern. Thanks for that background information. At the beginning of January of this year, you sent a letter to the members of the ICOC asking them to make certain reforms. What were the main points in the letter that you sent to them?
Well, I was starting to explore issues of conflict of interest at that time, and also starting to look at questions about applications of the Bagley-Keene Act, the open meeting law in the state of California.
Right.
Those were, I think, the primary areas of concern at that time.
Okay, and what did you ask them to do exactly?
Well, in my previous letters, I asked them to open, first of all, to rigorously apply the Bagley-Keene Act to their own meetings.
Right.
Their first meeting planned in December was in flagrant violation of Bagley-Keene.
Right.
And they basically erased 90% of the agenda because it was in violation of the act. And then with regard to conflict of interest, I asked them to start developing conflict of interest standards and procedures. And in response to that, the chairman agreed to make a public commitment not to invest in real estate companies or construction companies that would stand to benefit from the construction phase of Prop 71 grant making.
Did the rest of the members do the same?
No.
Okay.
No, well, they have not, and that is the reason why Dr. Philip Lee and I have filed the petition under the Administrative Procedure Act, which we filed recently.
Okay, tell us who Dr. Lee is.
Dr. Lee is a former Secretary of Health, Undersecretary of Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C. He's formerly Chancellor of UCSF. He is perhaps the most eminent public physician in the United States today.
Okay.
A real eminence grise in the medical field.
Okay. And tell us just a little bit about the procedure under which you filed this petition, the famous section of California Code 11340.6.
This section of the California Code permits any interested person to file a petition under the Administrative Procedure Act with a California agency. For these purposes, the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee under Prop 71 is a California agency.
Okay.
So we have the right to file this petition, and they have the duty to respond to it within 30 days.
When did you file it?
We filed it, I believe, on February 17th.
Okay, so they have till around the 15th or so of March to respond?
Something like that, and they have one meeting, March 1st,
right,
now and then.
Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. What do you ask for in your petition to the ICOC?
Well, we have seven paragraphs. And do you want me to just run right down them?
Yes, you can. Also, of course, we've covered this on California Politics Today already, and it lists all of these points, but I'd like you to go over them again briefly if you can.
Well, the first one relates to conflict of interest. We focus on the positions of chair, vice chair, acting president, and president first, and we say that they should be governed by the recently adopted rules at the National Institutes of Health concerning ethical conduct.
Okay.
That means that these four people cannot accept compensation from any private biotech company or from any... I can't remember the statutory term for it, but from any research institute which is or may get grants from the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Now, do you know if those four people are affiliated with such institutions now?
Well, we don't know who the president and acting president are.
Right.
So we're trying to tell them that in searching for such a person, they should make sure that they have somebody who either has no such conflict or is willing to take the steps necessary in terms of divestiture and resignation from boards.
Okay.
So that they would comply. Of the people currently in place, the vice chair, Dr. Penhote, is deep into the conflict of interest problem and would have to take some steps, either to divest and resign from positions he now holds, or else resign from the ICOC vice chairmanship.
Say again the four roles that are covered by the provisions that you're asking for.
Chair, vice chair
of the ICOC.
Yes.
Right.
And president, and acting president.
Oh, okay. Isn't Robert Klein both the acting president and the chair right now?
Well, he is currently, but they're going to select another acting president. They intend to at the March 1st meeting.
Oh, okay. And you're saying all four of those people, either or all three of them, however many there are, need to be uninvolved and unreceiving any compensation from any of the organizations that are going to get any of the money.
As you know, we've set out a very elaborate, detailed statement of what they have to do to avoid conflict of interest.
Right.
And it's based heavily on the NIH rules.
Okay.
Adapted to our situation here.
Okay.
At the present time, the importance of that proposed regulation of ours is that it would require Dr. Penhove to take some actions.
Okay.
And it would shape the search for the acting president and the president.
Right. It's saying again that that person would need to either be uninvolved or give up those commitments or involvements if he or she has any.
Yes. Now, I've mentioned only the compensation question. The NIH requirements as we've adapted them and urge the ICOC to adopt them, also require that there be no investment interest in any biomedical company.
For those four people?
Exactly.
Okay. So they can't get salary and they can't invest, they can't own stock.
That's right.
Can they put...
Penhode, of course, has a fortune invested in biochemical companies, biomedical companies.
Was he a co-founder of Chiron?
Yes.
Okay. The next section had to do with compensation and hiring?
Yes, that's right.
What were those provisions, briefly?
We urge the ICOC to adopt salary caps, specifically that none of the officers of the ICOC or of the CIRM receive more than the highest paid institute director at the NIH, which is the head of the I Institute, who's paid $290,000 a year.
Now, I saw that some sort of administrative people who've been hired so far are getting about $150,000 a year.
$155,000 for the assistant to the vice chair.
Right.
We consider that an unconscionable salary, and our suggestion is that no employee other than the officers receive a salary higher than the Secretary of Health and Human Services of the state of California.
Which is $131,000.
That's right.
Okay. You're also saying that the hiring should be done in an open process and that essentially outreach should be done to communities of color, women, and disadvantaged groups. What's the importance of that?
Pardon me?
What's the importance of that? Why have you...
Well, I think, you know, you've got an age... Well, first of all, every state agency should make outreach of that kind.
Right.
Second, here you've got Independent Citizens Oversight Committee itself, which has a terrible lack of diversity.
Right.
And they should be, in their hiring, making sure that the inadequacies of their own compensation are made up for by diversity in other positions on the staff. Unfortunately, they've, with their initial round of hires, done just the opposite.
Okay. Now, in a sense, the core of your petition has to do with the working groups. Tell our listeners what these working groups are and why they're important in the operation of the ICOC and the CIRM.
There are three working groups, one that has to do with buildings and capital investment and facilities.
Right.
The second that has to do with the overall standards that will govern the grant-making programs of the CIRM. And the third one is the one that will actually consider grant applications and make decisions about who should receive how much money and when.
Okay, now, as it now stands, absent your petition, what do you know about the timing of the creation of these working groups, the selection of the people to serve on them, and the beginning of their operations, and how that correlates with the creation of standards according to which they should be selected?
Well, our position is that nobody should be selected for these positions until conflict of interest standards are in place.
If for no other reason, so that the people who are being appointed to these positions will know whether they want to take the job and abide by those rules.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That, and you know, it's a waste of time and it's a waste of money to fill these positions with people who have conflict situations which would make it inappropriate for them to serve.
Now, have you seen anything from the operations of the ICOC so far that would show that they're not going to do that?
Nothing. What I've seen so far is a startling insensitivity to the conflict of interest problem.
Okay.
Witness the fact that when Dr. Penhote was elected as vice chair, not one person, first of all, the chair, Klein, supported his candidacy, and not one person raised the conflicts question.
Among the other 28 members?
27 members of the ICOC. Now, four of them supported a different candidate,
right.
But none of them suggested that conflict of interest was an issue of concern.
Okay. So you're not so much specifying what those, or are you, what those conflict of interest rules ought to be for the working groups?
No, we are not.
But you're saying that whatever those rules are, they need to be in place before the members are appointed.
Yes, that's right. And then we go on to make the obvious point that the meetings of the working groups should be subject to the Bagley-Keene Open Meeting Act and the State's Public Records Act, with such exceptions as those acts provide.
Okay, now,
but the idea that these should be closed meetings and the public should be totally excluded is a serious mistake.
Okay, so you want Bagley-Keene and Public Records Act to apply to the operations of the working groups.
Yes.
And what's been the response so far, and what have been the arguments in support of that response from the ICOC?
There have been no arguments made.
Oh.
You know, the Prop 71 does give the ICOC the authority to operate these meetings in secret.
Right.
But it's up to this committee whether they should be operated in secret or in compliance with state law.
Okay.
And we're making the argument that particularly if you look at something like the Standards Committee, which is basically going to be discussing, among other things, some crucially important questions of bioethics.
Right.
Or you look at the Facilities Committee, which is basically deciding on on brick-and-mortar grants to universities.
Right.
Or research institutes. These are meetings which plainly ought to be open to the public. There is no plausible argument that I've heard for closing such meetings.
And, in fact, these are functions of government that are often undertaken by other organizations besides the ICOC, and they're always open to the public.
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
All right. Let's move on to grant-making procedures. What's the issue here in terms of timing and any other considerations?
Well, I've been president of a grant-making foundation for more than a decade, and we made grants in the health area of millions of dollars a year. There are certain norms about how grants should be made. You start off by establishing grant guidelines.
Right.
Communicate them to the field, make sure that every potential grantee has ample time to prepare, to understand the guidelines, and to prepare an application. Particularly if you're dealing with massive grants like the ICOC will be distributing, it's extremely important that the potential grantees have ample opportunity to respond to grant guidelines.
Let me ask you a sort of a larger question that I haven't seen addressed yet, and based on your experience in a medical grant-giving organization, where in this process is the roadmap? Who and when and how are decisions being made essentially about what the overall strategic direction of the research is intended to be so that individual projects can be fit into that? Or is the process just people bring in suggestions for projects, and if they look interesting, they're approved? Is there a strategic vision that's necessary, and where is it supposed to come from?
That's a very good question. And so far, that has been discussed not at all. Now, it's early in the process, I must say. But before the grants are being made, and by the way, the ICOC is talking about giving out as much as $90 million in May this year.
Right.
And there's been no discussion of strategic direction.
Right. In other words, you want to say, here are the questions we're trying to solve, here are the tools we need to solve them, here are the things that have to be available for further research and so on.
Of course. I would say before the Nathan Cummings Foundation, which I headed and had the privilege of being the first president, before we gave out our first grant, our board probably spent 20 to 30 hours together.
Right.
In addition to prep time, working through grant guidelines.
Right.
And developing that strategic vision.
So in fact, the guidelines, the strategic vision and the guidelines are very closely related.
Of course, they are, and you can't have grant guidelines if you don't have a strategic vision.
Okay. All right, we've got that issue. In addition, you want to make sure that no grants are issued until the financial interests of the state and its taxpayers are specified and protected.
Yes,
what do you mean by that? What are the basic requirements under Prop 71 for that, and how much further do you want to go?
Well, Prop 71, certainly the campaign for Prop 71 promised that state taxpayers would be richly repaid for their investment in stem cell research.
Right.
I think the promises were too rosy and optimistic to my way of thinking, but the promises were made.
Those were promises both for money and for cures, right?
Yes, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
And it's not at all clear how those promises are going to be fulfilled. And I think those questions, intellectual property questions, the rights to licenses and fees and the like, should be in place prior to the time that the first grants are made.
Okay, now are
they're subject to modification, of course, and you
right.
know, I'm sure the ICOC will learn from experience, but you've got to at least take the first cut at it before you start putting money out.
Who is it who's in the position to negotiate with the ICOC over what those arrangements ought to be? Other than you, is there a committee that, or a government agency or anyone who meets with them to decide what that's going to be, or is that up to them to decide on their own under Prop 71?
Well, under Prop 71, they decided on their own, which gets to a very fundamental issue that you haven't asked me about yet.
Go ahead and answer it anyway.
And I think it's extremely important. And that is the fact that Prop 71 really launched two experiments, not one.
Right.
The first experiment is the one that is visible and publicly supported, and that is what I think of as a science experiment.
Right.
Can a state really launch an important new research field in a controversial scientific area with great promise for human betterment?
Right.
The second experiment, which was virtually invisible, is a political science experiment. The political science experiment involves the creation of a new kind of institution foreign to the California or the American political system. There is no precedent for something like the ICOC.
Right.
Because it is so insulated from any kind of political oversight or accountability.
All right. And in fact, that's...
And I think that is a very serious problem. As you may or may not know, there have been two suits filed, as I understand it, yesterday.
No, tell us about them.
They both challenge the constitutionality of this new, unprecedented institution.
I thought it was instituted through a constitutional amendment and is therefore immune to challenges on constitutional grounds.
No. Only a small part of this was embedded in the state constitution.
Oh, okay.
And that is unchallengeable.
Who brought these suits? What are they charging?
They were brought by, I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure.
I'll look into it. But
yeah, you should look into it.
Tell us what you know so far, though.
What I know is that they say that the California Constitution does not permit an institution structured and organized this way, protected as it is from any kind of oversight.
Okay.
Let me give you two examples.
Please.
One is the fact that this is an institution at the present time that is operating without an operating budget.
Right.
Certainly there's no other institution in California government or in the nonprofit sector that operates on an ad hoc basis, spending money without any kind of budgetary constraint.
Right.
Think of how an ordinary administrative agency in the state government has to develop a budget, present it to the executive budget office, work it through both houses of the legislature, and then they have a budget which binds and constricts the way they spend their money.
Right.
And assures that they're spending their money in a way which conforms to the public interest.
And, of course, all that is publicly arrived at and publicly recorded and known.
Right. And none of this, none of those procedures and the safeguards that go with them are embodied in this unique institution.
So, in fact,
the second example I want to give you is the ban on legislative amendment
right.
to the Act. And that is also unique.
So, in fact, what that suit and what you're suggesting in your comments is that by trying to immunize itself against any kind of outside interference and to give itself the right to do whatever it wants, it may have put itself out of the constitutional pale and thereby rendered itself impossible to continue.
The California Supreme Court will have to decide that.
Okay, well, there's more to follow then. So those are the substances. That's the substance of what you're asking for. Very briefly, I wanted to touch on the Standards of Ethical Conduct appendix that you've included and that we've included on the page that's going to be linked to from here. It's voluminous and detailed, and I have to admit I wasn't able to wade through it. What is it, and what, in brief, are its principles?
Well, I think I've already laid out the principles, Mark.
Okay.
The principles are that the officers may not accept compensation from any research institution or university
right.
or biotech company.
Okay, and that's what it says.
And they can't, it says this in great detail,
right.
you know, and real specificity, so there's no ambiguity.
But no ambiguity, but that's the gist of it, is that they can't get compensation from organizations.
Yes, that's right, and that all the employees of the CIRM and ICOC are limited by the compensation ban, and for them the investment ceiling is $15,000.
Okay, that's the substance. I want to talk now about procedure.
All right, we are also getting short on time.
Well, then we'll talk about procedure briefly.
Good.
Your petition asks for a public hearing.
Yes,
And the ICOC has under law 30 days to respond to that. As I report in this previous story, there's an agenda item on the ICOC agenda for their March 1st meeting, which you say is the only meeting that's going to take place before the deadline.
Right.
And they ask, the agenda item is for the consideration that Mr. Klein be given the authority to respond on behalf of the ICOC. Is that a standard procedure here?
No, it is not a standard procedure, and I am hoping that the ICOC will have the good sense to reject that proposal from Mr. Klein.
And your alternative proposal is that you and or Dr. Lee be allowed to address the ICOC at its March 1st meeting?
Well, that's not an alternative. We have requested the right to address the ICOC at its meeting.
Right. And have they
the substance of our argument.
Have they responded?
Respond to their question.
Have they responded?
Well, they responded by, at the present time, as I read that agenda, we are not given that 30 minutes, and I'm planning on writing to Mr. Klein and encouraging him to rethink that.
Okay, that's less than a week away.
That's March 1st.
March 1st. That's six days from now, I guess. Is there any recourse if they don't? They can change their agenda, obviously.
Yeah.
And
that's my hope, is that they'll change their agenda.
Okay. Are you beyond talking here? Are you doing anything politically or administratively to try to get them to change their mind about that?
No, I'm. I've been invited to testify before Senator Ortiz's committee and her hearings on March 9th.
Right.
And I'm planning to be in Sacramento to do that.
If the ICOC refuses to let you testify, do you have any legal recourse?
We have a right to seek judicial review. Whether we do so or not, we haven't decided.
Okay. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to you about what you decide. I'll let you go to your next important event.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for talking to us on California Politics today, and we're doing all we can to keep this process as open as possible and let everyone know what's going on.
I appreciate that. I enjoyed the conversation.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye.